Welcome to the talk show dedicated to the wine industry. It's All About Wine. With your host, winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida State's Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call our guest line at any time during the live show at area code 646-727-3235.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is educate people and make wine less confusing and more friendly.
Broadcasting on blogtalkradio.com and worldwide, including the Armed Forces Radio Network.
How this show has grown from, you know, maybe a couple hundred to over 40,000 people. And yeah. That's fantastic.
From coast to coast.
Baker, Kansas.
Deming, New Mexico.
Ithaca, New York.
Knoxville.
Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
Lexington, Kentucky.
Montana.
Moscow, Idaho.
New Hampshire.
New Mexico.
Santa Rosa.
Sevierville, Tennessee.
South Dakota.
The coast of Maine.
The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Westport, Mass.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that. Alba Vineyards.
Blog.10Live.
Boyslip Winery.
Brotherhood.
Camas Prairie Winery.
Candia Vineyards.
Fellow de Borghese.
Eagle Springs Winery.
Flathead Lake Winery.
Free the Grapes.
Grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery.
Hershey Harrisburg Wine Country.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery.
Tommy Bird Ridge Winery.
Joy Soy of Wine.
Prairie Berry.
Rainborn Wines.
Rocky Top Wine Trail.
Sheila Lauer Vineyards and Winery.
Southwest Wine.
Haber Hill.
Ten Spoon.
University of Kentucky Extension.
Vineyard at Hershey.
Vibach Winery.
Walt Vineyard.
Westport Rivers.
Wine Flower.
And around the world.
TheDriftingWinemaker.com.
Dunkle Tubbies.
I just arrived in Bali about 3 days ago.
All About Wine is on.
If you have any questions or anything to talk about, we will be more than happy to talk to you about or search it for you or try to find information for you out there, because there is a lot of information out there about wine.
We do occasionally get off topic.
Del Boar Winery.
The most well-known haunted winery in the Midwest.
I've heard voices at the winery.
Call area code 646-727-3235 and let's talk about wine on air. And now, wine enthusiast and industry representatives, All About Wine is on. Here is your host, Ron.
Thank you, bus people. Thank you. Excuse me, had a little cough there. Welcome to All About Wine. Glad you all can join us tonight. Mike is not with us. Mike is got a daytime job, and he's doing all right. So a little dire straits there, I think that was from. So he's not with us, but you can always listen to Mike. You can check him out on djmike.com. Radio DJMike.com. He's on every Friday and Saturday night. He does his own program, and he plays requests and all sorts of stuff. He's back on the air. I was listening to him last week for a little bit. Nice job. So if you have any requests, check it out, Radio DJMike.com. He is on Friday and Saturday nights. Not with us tonight, though. I got it myself, but I do have a guest. I have somebody who's going to be joining us in a few minutes here. A winery in Utah. You know, we went almost a year trying to get wineries from Texas. I call wineries in Utah, and there's only like 8 of them. And I've already got one booked for tonight and for next week. Yay! Where's my little crowd? I should have my little crowd cheer for that. But let's say that again. Got one for tonight, and we got one for next week. Yeah, there you go. Okay, so we're looking forward to both of them, and we might even have more. 2 weeks from tonight, we're not going to be on the air. It is Thanksgiving, and then we'll be on 3 weeks, and then we have another break there. Christmas, everything's hitting us on Thursdays this year, and then New Year's will be the week after that. So we're going to have some gaps in there, and we're going to have some shows that we're not going to be showed. We're going to be doing them. But we will be on this week and next week with some Utah wineries and representatives, and then we'll go on that. I was listening to that opening again, like I always do, and a lot of those wineries are on our, all of those wineries are on our list of wineries at the beginning. If you go to our website at www.allaboutwinebtr, you will be able to get links to all the wineries that are in that opening there, plus a lot more. So check them out. If you're going to be in certain areas or something like that, if you're traveling and you happen to pop in on a winery that is on our list, tell them, hey, I heard you on All About Wine. So that's always nice for them to hear that. And it's always good to let them know that people are listening to the program and listening to them. If you'd like to call all in tonight and talk to our guest, our number is 646-727-3235. Operators are standing by. Actually, I'm not. I'm the only one on tonight, so I'm not really standing by. But if you call in, I will be more than happy to bring you on the air if you'd like to come on the air. If you don't want to come on the air and I go to talk to you, just let me know. Just listening, and I'll cut you back out. You don't have to talk. If you're just listening through the line, that's fine. Some people do that. Instead of listening on the computer, you can listen on your cell phone or any number of ways you can connect with us. I am going to leave you for a minute or two here. I'll put on our great jazz background music here while I go get a hold of our guest. And we will be back in just a few minutes, so don't run away. We'll be right back.
This is Doug.
Hello, Doug. You there?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, fantastic. Okay. Wasn't quite on my phone. Mike usually calls you, but Mike is not with us tonight, so I called you, and that's why it was so weird, because I usually don't do that. Actually, I've done it a few times. I'm not an expert at it like Mike is. Got you on the air. Welcome to All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
I was trying to look up your website for the winery, and I obviously, you and I were talking earlier, and it's not under what I thought it was going to be under. It's under something else, and it's not under anything. What is your website?
It's www.igwinery.com.
Oh, no wonder. I never would have thought of that. Winery.com. All right, that's what I want right there. That way I can pull it up and we know. Oh, very nice website. Now, that way we can talk about what we're talking about. Doug was telling me something earlier. The name of the winery, he says IG Winery in Southern Utah. I found it under the name Iron Gate Inn and Winery. And Iron Gate Inn is a B&B in Southern Utah. And I called that, and they said, oh, do you want the number to the winery? And I said, sure. So the girl gave me the number 435 Top Wine, and that's the only way she knew the numbers, by saying that. And I got a hold of your tasting room manager, Tony, and Tony gave me your number. And then you said it's not Iron Gate Inn and Winery. It's Instant Gratification, or IG. What happened? Why are you now IG and not Iron Gate?
Well, we started out when we opened the winery. Of course, as you mentioned, we were there on the same property as the Iron Gate Bed and Breakfast. And so we adopted the name Iron Gate Winery. And we went along our merry way for probably the first 8 months of being open. And then we received a letter from a company in New Zealand, of all places, saying that they had the legal rights to use the name Iron Gate Winery in the U.S.
Oh.
So, yeah. So we did a little research and thought, well, how much is this worth to spend to fight this issue? So we dropped the use of iron gate in any sort of publication or on our labels or anything like that. So we just became IG. Since that was on our label anyway, we just kind of went with that for a while. And then just recently, we have come out with a second label called Instant Gratification. And we're now Instant Gratification. We can use the same IG and have
and
a little
not,
different name.
And not upset the New Zealanders.
That's right. I hated to tell them there are other iron gates in the U.S., so they'll have to, I suppose, go pick a fight with each one. But
they probably will, too. That's funny. That is funny. Give us a background. When did you all start? When did you open? What happened? Why are you a winery? And we will not get to the point where you live like 3 hours away, but what? Give us the story of how we started the IG Winery.
Well, I often get the question, why Southern Utah and why Cedar City? And so I've got very good answers for both of those questions. Actually, we opened in the summer of 2012 there in Cedar City, Utah. Cedar City, Utah. It's about... most people know where Las Vegas is, so it's about 2.5 hours north of Las Vegas on the I-15.
Oh, okay.
So, and in fact, I live in Las Vegas and make the commute regularly up to the winery, so...
I just shivered there. You didn't see it, but I shivered.
It's a beautiful drive, and I don't mind making it, but I had to, when we opened the winery, I wanted to be sure to keep my day job so that I didn't need to create any sort of a burden on the winery as we got rolling. So we opened in 2012 and have just sort of that first year. Of course, we were the new kid in town, and everybody was running in, trying out the tasting room, and really giving our wines a lot of local exposure. And then as we came into the fall and winter of 12 and 13, we began then to be able to catch our breath a little bit and turned our focus both to the tasting room, of course, and improving that experience and our selection of wines, but also trying to get out into the state of Utah and into the Las Vegas market and market our wines through distributors here in Nevada or directly to restaurants, clubs and other things up in the state of Utah. So that's been our focus now for a couple of years. And we, people say, why would you go to Utah? When I did my research and wanted to start a winery, I looked at California. And of course, there are hundreds of wineries in the state and some world-class wineries to boot. So I didn't know that I would wanted to go in and be sort of a little fish in a big pond. Mm-hmm. But the tourist numbers in Southern Utah, there's 5 million people a year that go through the area. There's numerous national parks, tons of gorgeous stuff for tourists to do. And it's actually a pretty large European destination market. And interestingly enough, there were no wineries. So to me, it made sense to be the only fish in the pond. And so that's why we wound up going there. Cedar City itself is home to the Utah Shakespeare Festival. And that's a Tony Award-winning Shakespeare theater. And it draws a ton of people into Cedar City all summer long to see the plays and be a part of the festival. And so we located ourselves real close by the theaters and went from there.
You said something there that caught my ear. You said a lot of European visitors. Why would there be a lot of European visitors to Cedar City, Utah?
Well, there is. It's the national parks. They love to come in and see Bryce Canyon. They love to come and see Zion. I think those are, it's topography that they don't get to see a lot in Europe, and it's a real draw for them.
Okay, I couldn't correlate why they wouldn't, but that makes sense. I understand that now. So then you opened up, you mentioned selling to a lot of restaurants and different places like that. You do quite a bit of business out of the winery itself, obviously.
Yep, we do. You know, we do quite a bit of business during the summer months. Cedar is at about 6,000 foot elevation, so during the summer, it's a great place for everybody in the area that wants to get out of the heat to go up to Cedar and get in the cooler climate. So it's a great summertime destination all by itself. Of course, the opposite is true. Then in the wintertime, they get plenty of snow and plenty of cool weather. So the winery tasting room slows down as the weather gets colder. But the tasting room itself certainly didn't want to be dependent only on what we could do out of the tasting room. And that's why we began to look at a lot of other markets, other ways to market our product to restaurants there in Southern Utah. And now we're expanding aggressively into Salt Lake City and Park City.
Oh, yeah. I have a daughter and a son-in-law that lives in Ogden.
Okay.
So they traveled around all the areas there. I'll have to send them down to you and let them take a look at the winery and all that.
Either that or tell them to go to the website, look on the link called Where We're Served, and list of restaurants, and they can probably find a restaurant not too far from their home, and they can run over and give us a try.
There you go. Okay, that's a good idea. I will let my daughter know about that. The wines, to begin with, let's start in the vineyard. Do you have vineyards?
We do not have vineyards.
Where do you get your grapes?
We contract with vineyards in California, Oregon, and Washington State.
Wow.
There are a couple of young vineyards that have been planted. There's a 3-acre and that was planted about 3 years ago. And there is a 5-acre vineyard now that has been planted this past summer, this summer. So we're beginning to see a little bit of grapes creeping into the Southern Utah area as entrepreneurs play with elevations, soil types, and different things to see if they can hit on the perfect spots for different vineyards. But right now, there just isn't anywhere close to enough product available. Even if we wanted to produce a Utah-only wine, we wouldn't necessarily be able to find enough fruit. So we go to Paso Robles. We get a fair amount of our fruit out of Paso. We did a Cabernet this couple of years ago in 2011 out of Sonoma. We do all of our Riesling out of Cave Junction, Oregon. And we've done, some beautiful Morvedre out of Horse Heaven Hills up in Washington. We did a little bit of Chardonnay out of Willamette Valley. And so we just, we source our fruits from good quality vineyards in some great grape growing regions.
So Utah, I don't know, you're the first winery we've talked to in Utah on the program. And so the question is there any vineyards in Utah? Is it conducive of growing any grapes? And if so, what? And, any information you have on that would be appreciated.
Well, like I mentioned, there are the two down there in southern Utah. They're actually south of Cedar City. As you climb from a town called St. George, which is there on the Nevada-Utah border. And as you climb up to Cedar City, Cedar, like I mentioned, is at about 6,000 feet. St. George is just under 3,000. So it's a long, say, 45-minute drive, and you climb about 3,000 feet as you go.
Wow.
And there are starting to be now a couple of guys who are, planting at different elevations along that drive. It's sort of, St. George is desert. It's hot. It's not quite as hot as Las Vegas, but it's pretty darn hot. Cedar is in the winters pretty cold, pretty tough on vinifera. So there's guys that are playing around with middle elevations to see if they can find something that will really, really work well. But it's very, very much in its infantile stage. Now, I think there's some vines some small vineyards, and when I say small, I'm thinking 1 to 3 acres, up around the Salt Lake area and some of those hills, but I'm really not an expert on that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I mean, it's just, well, I, you know, Utah, and don't get me wrong, I mean, I love the state. My daughter lives there, and it's just, it's a beautiful state. But Utah, with the Mormon background, seems like it would be almost anti-winery, anti, you know, breweries, all that stuff. Am I wrong?
Well, you're not wrong in the sense that it has that reputation. But it's sort of a split personality in many senses. There is a large cultural influence, I think, that pushes back against drinking, but there's just as large, you know, a population that has no issues with it. Mm. And the state rules are written such for wineries that it's really not that difficult to get a winery started in the state of Utah. They don't make the rules particularly burdensome. The licensing fees and things like that are very reasonable. So it's not difficult to start one. Now, taxes are high. They put very high taxes on alcohol. So that would, again, go back to sort of discouraging part of it. That's why I say it's a bit of a split personality. It's heavily taxed, and yet it's not difficult to start. So we play within the rules and try to make it work.
They get you by letting you start it, then they get you by the taxes.
Well, they certainly want to make, they want to make their revenue on the wine. And the interesting thing that makes it also very challenging is that Utah has a closed system, so the liquor stores are owned by the state.
Uh-huh.
And so you've got to, you know, we're always working to try to get the state to appreciate our product and put more of it in their stores. And it's that proves to be a real challenge and a constant process of meeting the right people and, you know, and pitching your product over and over and over to get into the stores. But it's an interesting place in a lot of ways. Cedar City, for example, when we went in, it's a small town. It's not a large town by any means. And a lot of people told us to expect resistance from a small town in Utah, but I got to tell you, they opened their arms to us. They couldn't have been more facilitating in getting a winery open in that town. They, you know, even folks who are adamant anti-drinkers came up to me after city council meetings and things and said, "Look, I don't drink alcohol, and I don't want to propose that anyone do so. But this is a great project. It's good for our town. It's good for our area." And I'm 100% behind what you're trying to do. So that's the kind of greeting we found. It was really not the stereotyped experience you might think.
That's great. I mean, you know, you know, when the city embraces you like that, it makes for better relations all the way around. You said that you're in a lot of different restaurants and stuff. So are you out there pitching this? Are you walking into restaurants and saying, "Hey, I'm IG Winery. I want to put my wine in your restaurant list and stuff"? Or how are you doing this, since it's state-ran stores that sell this stuff? It seems like it's a conflict somehow there.
Well, it's not a conflict. We are allowed under Utah law to go ahead and visit with any restaurant that we would like and introduce ourselves and talk about our product. And we can't under Utah rules sit down and do a tasting with them there in their restaurant. But we can explain, you know, the product. We can tell them that we're a locally produced, how we're produced. We can invite them down to the winery, you know, and so we just do a lot of that. You know, Tony, you mentioned earlier, who's right. At the winery is up out on the road a lot, just shaking hands and introducing himself and letting people know we're here, letting restaurant owners know we're here. And, you know, we'd love to get our product in. And it's funny. We'll meet all extremes. Folks who are real wine snobs and you want to come down to the winery and do a full tasting and go through the whole thing, and that's great. And we have other restaurant owners who you know don't drink personally. They don't. So they don't care. They just like the idea. They don't care how it tastes because they would have no appreciation. It's a local wine, a locally produced wine, and they like that idea. So
there you go.
it runs the gamut.
Oh, that's amazing. That's amazing. Let's talk a little bit about the wines here. I've got your tasting notes pulled up here on your page, and I'd like to go through each one. The Riesling that you said it was from Oregon, the Rogue Valley AVA. What style do y'all, are you the winemaker or is someone else? I understand you are.
I am the winemaker, that's correct.
Okay, very good, very good. So what style do you do this Riesling?
Well, it's dry. I actually do two Rieslings, both of them from the same area. And I do a dry Riesling and an off-dry. My dry is about 0.08% residual sugar. So there is just a pinch of sugar in it, but it's really quite dry. And I think most people don't detect any sense of sweetness. They will get a little extra kick of the green apple or perhaps some of the grapefruit flavors because there's a hint of sugar, but really it doesn't taste sweet at all. And then the off-dry Riesling that I do is about 3% residual sugar. And, of course, that has a easy-to-detect sweetness to the on the palate. Gives it it kind of takes it from that grapefruit and green apple flavors to much more of a red delicious apple and some apricot.
Oh.
So they're very different wines.
Do you find people are surprised at the dry Riesling? Because I have people come into the winery down here all the time, and they go, I love a Riesling. And I say, well, a Riesling can be very dry or very sweet. I mean, you know, the sweet ones, of course. And it just seems like the general concept people have of Rieslings are sweet. So when you pour them this dry Riesling, do you tend to get raised eyebrows and funny looks?
No, it's actually the other way around for us. We get a lot of people who come in and see that we have two Rieslings and go, oh, I don't like Riesling. I don't like sweet wines. And so we say, well, we have a dry Riesling. You really ought to try it. And they'll be like, no, I don't like Riesling. And so, you know, the staff, Tony and the others, are really good at getting people to understand that they need to try it because it's not like anything they've tried before.
Uh-huh.
And sure enough, when they sit out and they try that dry Riesling, you can watch their facial expression. If they're not a sweet wine fan, they love the wine. It's my number one selling white wine. So you know, it really, really does well. The price point is great for the quality of the wine. But people who don't like Riesling walk out the door with Riesling all the time.
Well, you know, I like a dry Riesling myself. There's so much depth and so much character to a dry Riesling, but so many people associate it with sweet. I mean, they think German and then they start thinking sweet. And so I was just wondering if you had it. I noticed on this Riesling though that you have 10% Chardonnay blended in with it. What does the Chardonnay do? Why 10% Chard?
Well, it just gives it a little bit of body. It's not a lot of Chardonnay, but it helps give the wine. Sometimes I think a Riesling can be a little thin on the mouthfeel. And I think just throwing a little bit of Chardonnay at it helps improve the mouthfeel.
Uh-huh. So just a little bit more of a heaviness to the mouth and to bring out that dryness too. So, yeah, that makes sense. That looks good. The semi-sweet, you selling off, or the off-dry, you call it. You selling off a lot of that?
We sell a fair amount. It's, you know, it's funny. Everybody, all the friends and stuff I have in the wine business, when I was looking at beginning and asking them for advice, they all said to me, be sure you have a sweet white. You've got to have a sweet white. That's going to be your biggest seller. I don't care, you know, how sophisticated you think you are as a winemaker. You must have a sweet white. So I did. I took their advice, and we offered this off-dry Riesling from day one, and expected it to be our biggest selling white, and it isn't even close.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The dry
it probably falls as our least. It's probably our least selling white.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
It shocks me every time I look at the numbers. I think I can't believe the pundits were so wrong on this one. I mean, I'm glad I have it, because we do get a lot of folks who come in and say, I don't know what I like. I just, I had something and it was sweet and I liked it. So we have something to offer them. But gosh, anybody who's a real wine fan comes in, they want to get to something a little drier.
But people overall, I've talked to wineries all around the country and stuff. And I think mm-hmm. the underlying thing is most people like sweet. And those who have been tasting wine for a while tend to gravitate toward a little bit drier ones. But especially the beginning drinkers, they all tend to go for the sweeter style wine. So you really have to have one on the shelf.
What's the old adage? Everybody talks dry and buys sweet, right?
Yeah. There you go. The Chardonnay, oaked, unoaked. How are you
un-oaked.
Making that?
Unoaked. I have to put a caveat on that, because I don't have on the website now, and I'm all out of my completely stainless steel. I do both of them in stainless steel tanks. And neither one of my Chardonnays do I put through malolactic. So, but the reserve, I hang an oak stave in the tank for about 6 months.
Oh.
And because I do that, I do it in 500-gallon tanks. One stave doesn't do a whole lot, but it will impart just a very light hint of oak on the nose, and then I think it improves the mouthfeel a little bit. So, but it doesn't give it the big oaky, buttery, none of those qualities, because the oak is so, as a ratio of wine to oak, it's so low.
Well, but oak really does help a lot of wines. I mean, when you put that little bit of oak in there, and it softens it, it gives it a little bit more, like you say, a little bit more of the mouthfeel, and it's really... just a hint of oak can really do a lot.
I agree.
The Roussan, is that your blush?
No, that is a straight Roussan. We were using the Roussan as a blender for some of our, we were putting a little bit into the Chardonnay to round out the Chard. Because the Roussan is a barrel aged, that's your, in my wine profile, if somebody comes in and is looking for a oaky, buttery, butterscotch, caramel white wine, that's the root. They're going to be directed by my staff or myself to that Roussan, and they're going to love that wine. So that's the style that I do it in. We barrel it. Barrel age it for 2 years.
Wow.
Really get it nice. And we started out just kind of blending it into Chardonnay and others to give it a little better mouthfeel, to thicken it up a little bit on the palate, and do some nice things with the Chard. But the more we did that, we just kept drinking the wine as we're blending and coming up with different blends. And a buddy of mine and I are sitting there one day, and we said, why are we being stupid and blending this wine away? It's absolutely excellent. So we stopped and started bottling it. So.
And that's what you have here on it.
Right, and it's been very popular ever since. People don't know a Roussan. They don't know the grape. They don't, they're not very familiar with it. They don't see it often. So the staff at the winery is real good about explaining Roussan and introducing them to the grape and getting them to try it. And once they try it, if they like that bigger white, they're hooked. I think the grape is more interesting than a Chardonnay, personally. That's why I like more so that I
was just thinking that when you were saying that. I think if you had the Roussanne and the Chardonnay side by side, I think most everyone would gravitate toward the Roussanne once they tasted it, because it does have more depth to it. Most any of them I've ever tasted just seem to give you something that the Chardonnays don't always do. So you're right on that. Then we go into the big reds, the Cabernet Sauvignon. What style do you have on that?
Well, my cab is Sonoma Valley 2011. Everybody knows 2011 was an interesting year for cabs in California. This wine, I think the biggest challenge with this wine has been it's a beautiful wine. The color is gorgeous. The flavor profiles, the fruits are gorgeous. But it's fighting to stay young.
Oh, yeah.
And this is really, so we, you know, we keep, every year that goes by, we like it a little bit more, and we, you know, it just gets better and better. But in these early years of selling it, you know, we're telling folks this is a good wine, and everybody, you know, it moves out of the winery very well. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, one of the things we pride ourselves on is that we do a very, very nice wine, and we price it very, very reasonably. So if you took any of our wines to California and put them in a winery there, you could probably charge twice what we charge.
Uh-huh.
So folks who know their wines come in, they taste it, they go, gosh, for $21.95, for $22, I'm getting an amazing Cabernet here. So it's for us, it's just one of those wines that it's delicious. It's got some green bell peppers on the profile, on the palate, a little bit of green bean, maybe a hint of mushroom, a few things that personally I'd like to see soften. And so when I say it just refuses to age, it's just those flavors, while I like them, I'd like to see them soften up against the fruit a little bit, and it's not moving along fast enough to make me happy. But it's a great wine.
What percentage of Merlot? I noticed you said Cab and Merlot both are in it. What percentage of Merlot do you have?
We put 80% Cab, 20% Merlot.
Oh, so there is enough Merlot in there to affect it a little bit then.
Yeah, definitely. Yep.
Oh, wow. It sounds like a great wine. I'm excited about that. I need to make a trip out there and visit my daughter and come down and see you. Tempest.
Please do.
Yeah, I'd love to do that. The Tempest Red Blend from Paso Robles. What do you have in this? What is this of?
Well, this is our red blend that we call the Tempest because we, like I mentioned to you earlier, we're located just a couple of blocks from the Utah Shakespeare Festival.
Right.
And so we wanted to put something together that sort of honored the festival and their contribution to the area. So we came up with the Tempest name, and it's sort of a red blend that we re-blend about every 6 to 8 months, depending on how quickly the wine goes. So right now we've got a wine that is predominantly Tempranillo, but it also has then some Cabernet in it, some of the Merlot in it, and a little bit is a, you know, earlier you were asking me about Utah vineyards. There's a little vineyard east of Cedar up in the mountains. And we got a few barrels out of there a couple of years ago, and we've been playing with it, keeping it, you know, in barrels, seeing where the fruits will go, just seeing what kind of quality we can get from a Utah fruit. And it's a little town called Orderville. So we threw in a little bit of Orderville wine into that blend so that we could tell folks who really want to try a little bit of Utah wine that there's a little bit in that wine, so give it a try.
All right. And it's blended in there. Balanced out.
Yep.
Well, you got a good price point on
it. I won't tell you how much is in there, so it won't spoil the fun. But
Yeah, there's some in there, though. you got a good price point on that, though. I can see why that would sell, especially, you know, for the Shakespearean Festival there. The price point is great.
It's a delicious wine. It goes well. Restaurants like it too because they can pick it up for their By the Glass program.
The reasonably priced.
Well, yeah.
Petite Syrah. Petite Syrah is, you know, the old debate is that the same as a Syrah, you know, but a Petite Syrah you make.
This is our first. We just released this. I did a small batch, 4 barrels.
Wow.
And yeah, because we kept, you know, we had a Syrah which was very nice. It was out of Washington. I got the grapes up near the Prosser area, and we burned through the Syrah pretty quick. But it wasn't when folks come into the winery and they're the more sophisticated wine drinkers, they're your wine snobs. They're usually looking for either that $100 a bottle Cabernet, or they're looking for a very elegant Syrah or Petite Syrah. So we, you know, as more and more people came in looking for that sort of that really, you know, what's your biggest wine? What's that secret you've got hidden in the back? We decided, you know, let's put together a really nice Petite Syrah. And so we did, and we got some, I got some fruit from Napa and then a little bit from the Sierra foothills, and put an amazing little blend together that just turned out to be a real home run. In fact, we just won a gold medal on that last week.
Congrats.
Yep, thank you. So it's it's been a real home run. And what it does is it really satisfies the folks who come in saying, I'm looking for something a little more sophisticated, something a little bit more technically, requires a little more technical expertise to enjoy. And so that's what we've got, and it's been very popular.
Big, bold Petite Syrah? Or?
Exactly. Big, bold, dark, well tanned, a lot of structure to it. It's
good now, or does it need age?
No, it's good now. In fact, everybody's been drinking enough. We're down to about 1 barrel left.
Oh, boy. I need to make a trip out to see my daughter. Well, it's snowing. I don't make trips to Utah in the winter.
I don't blame you.
It sounds interesting. You're going to don't sell it all. I want one. you have a big medal winner here in the Tempranillo. Coming out of Paso Robles also.
Yes. That's some of the Tempranillo that we used in our Tempest red blend. Different year. The Tempest that I mentioned earlier that had Tempranillo has a different year. This is our 2005, which is really an amazing wine. It's been in barrel, in neutral barrel. It was in live oak for probably, I guess we kept it in live oak for 6 to 8 months, and then we moved it over to neutral and put some polish on it. But then when we were done with a little bit of stave treatment, it's just sat in neutral barrels since that time, and we only bottle it as we need it. In other words, I don't take all that I have and bottle it up. We keep it, and in fact, this year now, I will bottle up what's left of it because there's just not that much left. So we'll have a couple hundred cases of it left, and we'll be done with it. But what that has really allowed that wine to do is just really mature in some amazing ways. With some of the beautiful leather notes and the dark fruits, and
I have to ask,
of profile.
If you're bottling it separate like that, and I were to walk in and buy one of these Tempranillos at the very beginning, and then I waited and came back a year later and got this last batch, aren't we getting a different flavor structure on this?
Well, you will get a little bit different, and depending on how sophisticated your palate is, you may or may not be able to detect some of the difference. It's in neutral barrels, so it softens a little bit in neutral as it sits. But now that I've sort of made the run to the finish line and got it all bottled up, it's in a stop that process, but you might notice a little bit. You might come in and think, but what I tell everybody, and honestly, I've never had anybody come back to the winery and say, gosh, I noticed a difference between a bottle I bought this year and last year. But if they did, I would just, you know, I'd be curious to know whether they thought it had improved. And I wonder.
Yeah. Are you going to do, you said you're finishing up the bottling on this, are you going to get a 2014 batch of grapes or 2013 and start the process all over again now?
Yeah, we'll do a 2014. I have 6, 7, and 8 still in barrels. I don't have nearly as much of that as I do the 05, but I've got 6, 7, and 8. I had 9 and 10, and when we opened the winery, kind of funny, I made a weird decision, not quite sure why, but when we opened the winery, I thought, yeah, I'm not sure how well received this 2005 is going to be, because it's not a typical Tempranillo. It's nothing like your standard Spanish style. It's a much heavier, much darker style. So I decided to roll out with a 2009 and 10 that I had. Well, we burned through the 9 very quickly, and then we burned through the 10 very quickly. So now I'm going, oh, crap. All right, let's jump back to the 5 and just see what happens. And you know, we've been selling the 5 very, very well, too. So it's been very well received. And as you can see there on the website, it's won a couple of gold medals, a couple of silver medals.
Bronze, yeah.
Yeah.
You, is the 6, 7, 8 all the same style as this, or are you getting the same structure, or is it varied a lot?
You know what? The differences I'm noticing between the years is the acids. I'm a guy who refuses to add acid, and I don't like to add any chemical to a wine. If there's a flaw or a fault or something I don't like, I'm going to blend it away.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to correct it by adding something natural, another wine. I'm not going to add a powder or anything to it like that. So I noticed that the 2006 is very similar to the 5, that the 7 is more acetic, and the 8 is really, the 7 is probably the most acetic, and then the 8's dropped back a little bit.
Uh-huh.
So I'm going to play with a blend to even out some of those acids between the different years.
Or
oak. Well, they're in oak now. But wow. I may drop staves in the tank to give it a little bit more punch. So anyway, we're just playing with that right now to get it where I think it needs to be.
This sounds interesting. And then you have, as everyone does, your sweeter wine, but this is a late harvest Zinfandel. What? Why?
Well, this is a funny story. A guy that I work with in Lodi called me one day and said, "Hey, I got these grapes that are pretty amazing. They got the 33 Brix sugar."
Whoa.
And that's exactly what I said when he called me and said, "You're kidding me." And he said, "No." And he said, "You want some of this stuff?" He says, "I think it's got the potential to be a really cool late harvest." So I said, "Absolutely. Let me do that." So we wound up making about 300 gallons of it. And we stopped fermentation at about 10% residual sugar. So it is very much a dessert wine. But because we started at 33 Brix, right, the wine is 14.5% alcohol with 10% residual sugar. So you get this really cool combination of sweet but full-bodied and, you know, alcohol that we always, you know, jokingly tell people at the winery, be careful, because this is one of those wines you sit around, it's so sweet, you think you can sip it all night long and it's not going to have any effect. And when you stand up, you kind of stumble a little bit. And go, whoa.
You fall back over.
exactly. But it's just a beautiful red. And we bottled a barrel and a half or so of it. And then we put the rest of it into a puncheon. and let it sit for 2 more years.
Wow.
And we're just now, in fact, just last weekend, we pulled out about half the puncheon and bottled it. And it is, I thought it was good when we started. It is just amazing little wine. And that puncheon for another 2 years has just rounded it out so much nicer. I'm sorry that I'm coming to the end of it. I've got one barrel left because it's going to be a tough thing to replace.
Wow. It's like grape jam coming out of it. Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, yeah.
We tell
everybody, have this with it. We give them a chunk of dark chocolate when they taste it at the winery. And then if you're a cigar smoker, we tell you to go outside and have a cigar with it.
Yeah, I make a strawberry port that I always suggest with the cigar. So,
nice.
It is really good. It's fresh, Florida strawberries and port, and it turns out very, very well. This is fascinating on these wines. And the question I always like to ask, you looking at expanding your inventory, or are you going to pretty much stay with what you've got here?
Well, I'd like to stay with what we've got to a certain degree. Now we're in, we're getting into enough restaurants where they come to look to us to be able to continuously supply, a reliable product without having to change their wine list every few months. And so we'll try to honor that by making sure that we have those wines fairly consistently. But I think what we'll be doing is what I like to call small lot one-offs. So that while we don't, while we always have our standards and the things that people know us for and come looking for, when they show up at the winery, they're going to find that we have this one or two barrels of a Malbec or another different Cabernet from a new region, perhaps a really high-end Napa Cab hidden away in the corner. So there's I'd love to do another really beautiful Syrah. So we're just going to play around with sort of these small lot one-offs and really give folks who come into the winery a surprise time they come in, depending on, they can always get the standbys, but then we could try these smaller ones too. So
that sounds fascinating. Make a Cabernet Franc.
Yep, that's another one that I'd love to do.
Yeah, that you sound like you would make a beautiful Cabernet Franc. That's one of my favorite wines. That's why I brought it up. So,
that,
have it ready by next summer. I'll come out, visit my daughter, come down, and we'll go from there. Oak, stainless steel, plastic. What do you use? Everything. Primarily what?
I only use plastic if I have to ship something in a tote, from a custom crush facility to my winery. Otherwise, it's all stainless and oak.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And the oak, I noticed on your thing here, you're talking about French and American. Where are you sourcing your American oak?
Well, most of my barrels are neutral. So I buy them, from other wineries, depending on who's got some good quality barrels available. I even have a Hungarian barrel or two in the lot. and then it usually, because, I'm a small winery and barrels are brutally expensive, I'll generally use almost exclusively neutral, but I'll hang different staves in, French staves, American staves, and add my oak profile while I still get some of the benefits of the barrel, of the evaporative concentrating and the surrounding of the edges and just time, the wonderful things that a barrel will do to a wine in addition to adding some oak.
Right, without having to spend an ungodly amount of money to buy a new one. That's a good idea, what you're doing there. That works very well.
Yep.
Is this winery on any type of wine trail or any type of, I mean, there's not a whole lot of wineries in Utah, so a wine trail would, almost seem impossible. But is there anything like that set up around there?
No. We are the only winery in southern Utah. I think the next closest winery is about 500 miles away.
Wow, that would be a long trail.
It's a long trail. Now, I think the state has seven wineries. Most of them are in the north part of the state. There's a winery, Jay Yaney, who has the Hive Winery up in Salt Lake City. And Jay has been real active this year in putting together a Utah Winemakers Winery Association.
I was going
to
ask
that the seven of us could, so that we could kind of get together and talk, you know, work through different issues with the legislature more importantly, probably the Utah ABC, speak as one voice and work together a little bit more in special events and, you know, try to promote Utah wines and just the things that all those types of associations do. And so that happened this summer, and so we're in the infant stages of a wine association.
I think Jay's going to be my guest next week. He got a hold of me while I was driving home, and I think he's going to be on. He says he makes 51 different wines.
Jay's crazy.
Yeah.
He does fruit wines. He doesn't do grape wines, but he does some amazing work with fruit wines and some meads and some hard ciders. So you'll enjoy Jay, and he's got some great stuff.
Yeah, well, he said that he couldn't find the brandy he wanted for blending, so he decided to start a distillery and do his own brandy. I told him, I said, you're nuts. He says, yeah, well, a lot of people say that. But he's going to be the guest next week on there, since you mentioned Jay there.
Good.
Before we get off, give me all the information about the winery, where you are located, phone number. Oh, one other thing before I get into that. Why do you live in Las Vegas and commute up there? That's a long ways. That's 5-hour round trip.
Yep. I've been in Las Vegas for 30 years, grew up in the hotel casino business. That's how I got exposed to wines in the first place. And like I mentioned to you earlier, I don't want to quit my day job yet. I want to grow this winery to a point where I can do that and I can quit and do it full time. But I don't want to be a burden on the winery at this point financially. So Tony covers it, you know, during the week, and I get up there on the weekends and do my winemaking thing. And so far it's been good. We rent a house up there during the summer, and it makes for, you know, nice chances to get out of the heat and grow that winery.
It sounds like the life there. It really does. Tell us the whole contact information, Facebook page, Twitter, blog, you know, whatever, all the information, phone numbers, addresses, everything for any of our listeners out there who might want to stop by or get in touch with you.
Right. Well, just on Facebook, we have an IG Winery. You can just go in and search for IG Winery on Facebook, and you'll find our page there. I always recommend that. We are on Twitter at IG Winery. We also then, you mentioned earlier, our website is www.igwinery.com. That also has links to our Facebook and Twitter if anybody would like to just follow the links through the website. We're located in Cedar City, Utah, right there near the campus of the Utah Shakespeare Festival at 102 North 200 West Street. And we've got a tasting room. Now we're on winter hours right now, so we're not open. We're open Thursdays through Saturdays from noon to 8 p.m. But if you're coming out during the summer, we are open Monday through Saturday and Monday through Thursday until 8 p.m. and then Friday, Saturday till 10 p.m. So we'd love to have anybody that's in the area come by and say hello, and try the wines.
And Utah law says you have to close on Sunday, I believe. Is that not correct?
Right. Yep. Got to be closed on Sundays and holidays.
Yeah. Okay. I heard something about that. So Well, fantastic. Doug, thank you so much for taking the time out this evening. And actually, you're 3 hours behind us. You're over there in Las Vegas, which is 3 hours behind us. So it's mid-afternoon for you almost. So thank you for taking the time out and joining us on the program and telling us all about IG winery or instant gratification or whatever anybody happens to know it as. But great stories, a lot of fun. Thank you so much. Very knowledgeable, and it was quite enjoyable. And we'll look forward to when I go out and visit my daughter, and I guarantee you I will not make the trip in the winter. When I go out and visit my daughter in the summer, I will do everything I possibly can to make it down to southern Utah and visit with you.
Please do, Ron, and thank you for the opportunity to chat. It's been a lot of fun, and I look forward to seeing you at the winery.
Very good. Thank you for taking your time. Have a good evening now.
Have a great, you too.
Thanks. All right. And there we go. And Mike always hits the claps there. And I need to find the claps. And that way we can go and, oops, not that one. That's the booze. We don't want a boo. We want to do a clap. Where's the claps? And yay. Oh, here we go. Here's there. All right. That's it. Yeah. All right. Thank you, Doug. Appreciate it. Appreciate the time you took out with us. Appreciate what you've done. Well, great job on the winery and the wines and everything. I'm quite excited. Zinfandel, I don't sell it out before I make it out there. That sounds fantastic. And what was that? My engineer's in the background going, yes, yes, we need one of those. We need one of those. And all the wines sound real good. So if you want to get in touch, you keep all the information out there. Anyone that's listening, get in touch with him. I don't know what the shipping laws are. I forgot to question him about that. We'll find out next week. We do have a guest next week coming on the show, Jay from Hive Winery. He does a whole bunch of wines. I was talking to him a little bit earlier. And so he sounds like he's going to be a lot of fun and a good guest and all that stuff. And we'll find out even more about Utah wineries and what they have to offer and what they're doing and everything. This weekend, we have a fundraiser at the winery. Let me just tell you a little bit about it. I'm not going to play the thing because it's really not a festival. It's a fundraiser. West Pasco Kiwanis is doing, semi-annual fundraiser to raise money and funds for what the Kiwanis do. And we're going to have, I think, 25 vendors there where you've got all sorts of entertainment scheduled. We got wine tasting scheduled. The wine is on the shelf, ready to be purchased. It's $20 admission fee. All proceeds go to the West Pasco Kiwanis for their fundraiser. And it's going to be from noon to 4. So mark your calendars and make a trip out and come and see us and let me know that you heard me on the radio, and which is always fun to hear people tell me that they've heard me on the radio. And you can always visit the website at the winery too, and the website for the show here is available also. So thanks for tuning in again, and thanks for being part of the listening audience out there. Next week we'll have another Utah guest. We'll talk a little bit. I usually start programs when we do a new state, telling you a little bit about that state and the topography and all the stuff about it. And the reason I do that is because, like Doug was just on there telling us, you know, this road and that road and all that, it's hard to picture it. So we'll try to get you caught up on that stuff too. And we still got some other wineries. He said 7 wineries. I've been calling them and I've been trying to get a hold of them. They are out there. So we'll see if we can't get some more people on. I got a couple of them here that one of them that says he can very possibly be on December the 4th for us, and that will be the week after Thanksgiving. So we might have ourselves 3 guests right away here. 2 weeks from tonight, Thanksgiving, so we won't be on. But next week we will be back with Jay. So thanks for taking your time to listen to us tonight. Mike, I don't know if he'll be back or not next week. Like I say, he's got his new job, which is requiring different hours and different things, but you can always check him out. Radio DJ Mike.com. So check that out. Thanks for listening. we'll see you all next week. And I said that too soon because I need to hit the button here for the closing it out. And Mike is usually on top of this stuff too. See, I just, you know, he doesn't realize how much I count on him on this stuff. So, again, thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida States Winery. Florida States Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida, 4 miles west of Interstate 75 or east of US 19 and US 41. For more information on Florida States Winery, visit the website at floridaestateswines.com or call area code 813-996-2113. The email address is corp@floon.com. That's corp@floon.com. For more information on All About Wine and future shows, please like us on Facebook at facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr or visit our website at allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available as a free download on iTunes and on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Follow the Armed Forces Radio Network on Twitter at the AFRN and on Facebook at facebook.com/Armed Forces Radio. Thank you for listening to this show. We'll see you next time on All About Wine.